for plebs by plebs, dropping the Bitcoin only signal. Pleb Underground. Welcome everyone to the Pleb Underground.
Pleb Underground, episode 76. Not spamming you just for the clicks. Bitcoin's number one, there's no relegation. No politics from this delegation. Not dealing the hopium for your relation. HODL keys for years, passed to a relation. Pain is compulsory, but suffering's an option. We need more scaling for real-world adoption. Give it to me, come here, she beckoned. Told her it's only in bed that I come second. She knows like Bitcoin, we're up all night with high heels. She's at my block height. Send her home in an early taxi. Bend her, roam, there's no backseat. Not a taproot wizard, but she's under my spell. What's her name? Nah, I don't kiss and tell. I like philosophy, so I'll quote Nietzsche. A real man lacks two things is what I teach her. Danger and play, no bug, it's a feature. Dangerous playthings, can't let them beat ya. No stress in this area, she likes the strength. No need to explain, it's under tension. A little excess, she loves the length. No need to strain, here's the extension. They say black don't crack, well pale don't get stale. Keep working yourself and you can never fail. I'm the man, fighting off leeches, never slipping. Off to get a tan, these beaches be tripping. Espresso martini, I craft the barman. She knows I got the whips, but I'm not the car man. Can't take the Ben out of Ben. Each of my girls rate 10 out of 10. In my time, I tell them when. They're locked down, each one in my pen. Not in a cell, find a bell and dance. The only L I'll take is L enhance.
Nicely done, Walton. Really enjoyed that. And guys, in case you didn't understand, who is joining us today? We've got a very special guest, fellow Bitcoiner, pleb, and I'd say coder as well, right? We've got Reardon. Yep. Reardon, man, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to talk about all things Bitcoin and Ellen Hans.
Yeah, it's most likely going to get muddy because there is a lot of drama out there in Bitcoin, and I definitely want to get your takes because I've seen you there in the trenches, man. I've seen you in the trenches asking questions that are triggering people. Okay, so it's good stuff. Anyways, guys, we are going to move it on over to the numbers.
Yeah, the numbers, of course, brought to us by Time Chain Stats and Time Chain Calendar. What do they look like this week, Phil?
At the time of this recording, the block height is, where is it? 831,717. The Bitcoin fiat exchange, 51,145.17. Total public Lightning capacity, 4,771. Moscow time, 19:55. Fastest fee, we're looking at 20 sats per V-byte. Days to the halving, that's right, 57. And the chain rewrite days, 662. Guys, the numbers. Good numbers, bad numbers.
Good numbers.
What was the fee rate again?
Fee rate was
Moscow time, 19:52. 26 average fee,
right? So yeah.
Went up again.
But it's cheap, right? 20 sats per V-byte?
Yeah, it's still pretty good.
Is anybody really minting anything? Are they even minting? Anyways. All right, let's take a look at our first numbers article. Here we go. It is argued that this could have been part of Wrecked. Okay, fair enough. It's argued that it could have been part of Wrecked, but I think this is a great tweet here. From Jameson Lopp, and here we go. Some estimate, Calvin Iyer has spent $100 million to $200 million over the past 8 years supporting Craig Wright and the BSV charade. Was it a wise investment? Calvin had simply bought $100 million worth of BTC when Craig came out in late 2015. It would be worth over $14 billion. Let that sink in. So yeah, it could have been.
Phil's renamed Calvin Ayer to Calvin Iyer because Calvin has quite a lot of ire for the bullshit that Craig has put him through now at this point. I'm guessing Craig promised him some cut of, you know, the million coins that Craig has, right? And Calvin's not going to get any of it. Yeah.
You think Craig
a
has
a lot
coins?
Of money?
What are your thoughts? No. Do you follow any of the BSV crap? You actually write code. So if you don't, I totally understand.
I don't follow the BSV crap itself, but I keep a little bit of an ear to the overall Craig Wright shenanigans and Calvin Ayer. You know, I think you're right that he probably expected some cut. And the problem is that for people who are not technical, they can't tell that it's a cut of zero. they can't tell that Craig obviously has nothing. And so a small percent chance of a huge payout, you know, that could be a rational choice for someone who doesn't know anything, which Calvin Heyer doesn't know anything.
That's a very good point. Very good point. All right, moving on from there, we're going to take a look at the next one here. Okay, so we've got this tweet here from Game of Trades, and this is shocking. The market is up 5,000% since 1970. Of course, talking about the U.S. market, right? But only 500% when adjusted for inflation. I got to tell you guys, this is very bad. Now, I'm not entirely 100% sure of the accuracy of these numbers, but they do seem to make sense when you think about the purchasing power. So is this more of the fiat magic, right, that hides the theft? I think so.
I mean, it definitely is. I mean, this is, I'm sure you guys have talked before about the Jack Bogle inventing the index fund around the time of 1971. And so sure enough, here we see that the only way to survive since then has been to use those index funds to be protected from inflation. So it makes perfect sense.
Interesting, isn't it? But it's really sad because those gains aren't even real gains, right? Like the most important aspect of it is the purchasing power that I believe is the purchasing power that we lose. And it's the piece of the pie, like it's the piece of the puzzle that they remove, right? So you're just sitting there thinking it's this wonderful, glorious future where you've made so much. Anyways, Walton, what are your thoughts?
So index funds, what I had my money in before I found about Bitcoin, not that I had very much, but they're one of the largest like stores of value for people globally because they think they get real diversification, right? A buzzword, because they're investing in many, many, many stocks, right? But what they don't understand is that a lot of equity is heavily correlated, and so actually they don't achieve real diversification, because to have real diversification you need uncorrelated assets. To add to that, because people don't have the time to choose what they invest in, everyone invests in these same index funds, and because they can't save in fiat currency, a lot of people put money into these, and so they're all they've all got too much money in, and they're actually the probably the biggest reason why essentially all equities are overvalued, which then drives a lot of CEOs all over the world to do some kind of terrible things, because if you have essentially the job of a CEO for a publicly traded company is to pump the stock price. Like they may have other roles, right? But that's ultimately their role. And I'm pretty sure all these CEOs know that the equity is overvalued, right? Their profit to earnings ratio is way higher than it should be. I got that wrong. You know what I mean? Like this, like they essentially, and it leads them to cut corners, right? You know about shrinkflation, you know about prices going up, but it also leads to them, I think, doing like real pollution, right? Like real degradation of things. You get like poor training, you get all sorts of things that essentially contribute to kind of societal erosion, and people hating their jobs and being forced to cut corners even though they don't really want to. But it's because, you know, those up top who pay the bills, who pay the salaries, are telling them they have to do that, because otherwise these juggernaut corporates don't make any money.
I think you make a very good point. Oh, go ahead, Reardon.
Oh, no, I agree as well. There's a huge distortion in this overemphasis on quote investing, which is what should have been savings traditionally. And it really messes up the way markets work. I think before the index funds, you know, investing was a more conscious thing. And so if you invested in a company, that was a deliberate action. And therefore, the CEOs actually did have the ability to have a longer term outlook because they had intelligent investors who were deliberately invested in that company's long term vision. But with the index funds, it does become exactly what you said of a quarter to quarter stock price pump.
Yeah, it sadly is, and I can actually provide a little bit of an example to that type of scenario. The company that I used to work for, I remember once because of the position that I was in, we ended up being in a small meeting with the directors, right, of the company, the board of directors, and the CEO. Okay, so essentially, right, they were explaining how like our business was at a crossroads. I worked in the access control space, security space. Businesses were at a crossroads and massive innovation is needed. Now, I worked in the office that had the quote unquote, the innovation center, so to speak, right? And what the board of directors did, which was I thought was very interesting, is they had the CEO standing there and one of the main guys, I guess the one that was chosen to speak on their behalf, not the CEO, right? Like some guy that the board of directors chose to speak that was not the CEO, stood up and looked at us and he goes, you know, he goes, we need you all to innovate. And if you're not going to do that, then we're going to find people who do. And to me, right there, that expressed exactly what Walton is talking about with the poor incentives and just these broken models and the unhappiness. Like, I genuinely feel like innovation doesn't come out of a box like that, like a corporation like that. Like, I kid you not. I mean, I worked directly with engineers, guys who were creating things out of nothing, right? Like, it's just an idea, and then all of a sudden it becomes a piece of software, and all of a sudden it gets applied to a piece of hardware. And these guys, like when we got up from that meeting, they just looked at me and they're like, that's not going to fucking work. So like there's so much detachment, right? That's my point, is there's extreme detachment between essentially a person and what they're building and these, you know, these faceless boards of directors, you know? Anyways, it's really sad.
Yeah, I had a VP of engineering come to me and say, the code coverage should be this number. And I was like an engineering manager at the time. And of course, like that's not how it works. You don't as the VP or as an executive come and demand a number. You want people to have autonomy, and you ask them, you know, how are we going to improve this outcome that I want? But you don't just demand a number out of them or demand innovation. You can't do that.
What was the number that you're quoting? They're saying they want like a certain number of like lines of code, or what's the?
They wanted a certain percentage of code coverage with tests. So there, he was like, the code coverage.
Oh my God.
In your group is 70%. It should be 80.
Sorry, just for those of us that don't understand this term, what does code coverage mean?
That's the out of all the lines of code you have, how many of them are executed by a test run?
Yeah, essentially, how many of them do you get through QA, right? Like quality assurance.
So why shouldn't everything have QA?
So in software, a lot of times you write code that may be executed, but is very hard to actually execute. So you might have an error case that's only going to happen if a cosmic ray strikes your chip in this very weird situation, but you still want to have that error case in your code, but you can't trigger it in a test. That's the most common reason you wouldn't have test coverage for something. Similar with like UI code, if you have a user interface and users are going to click on all these different places, it's very hard sometimes to get an automated test that triggers every possible case. But you still wrote the tests or wrote the code to cover all of that. And so there's various theories of how you can improve code coverage. Like the Bitcoin Core project, for example, has almost 100% code coverage because it has a fairly small UI surface and a very large consensus kind of complex backend stuff. And it's very important. So they invest very heavily in code coverage, but most software does not have that level of test code coverage.
Thank That's you. Right. So this essentially is a result of suits and data driven management of companies and them not really understanding what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Because code coverage is a choice that you apply based on what your users really are going to benefit from. And so in some places it matters a lot, like Bitcoin, but in other cases, if you can move quicker and have very good quality with a kind of much lower code coverage level for some products.
Just remember that not you, Reardon, but I'm just saying like in general, right? Like the timeline for some reason seems to be very important. So I remember what used to happen with us was like, let's say there was a major release, right? And you have like, there's like 1,000 bugs, right? That had to get checked. But the date for that release, according to the board of directors and what's going to be reported up is, you know, like February 24th. Well, whatever bugs you've tested up to February 24th, that's what's tested. And then it ships. And then all, and then the stuff comes back from the field, right? You know, and it's like, oh, we weren't aware of that. It's like, no, that bug was written like 8 months ago. You know, like we just didn't fix it. So there's, unfortunately, it's, yeah, it's kind of a slippery slope when it comes to a lot of that, you know, you end up with a lot of minimum viable products.
A lot of that. Yep.
Anyways, guys, let us know what you think. Put it in the comments. And that wraps up the numbers. We're going to move it on over to, it's going to be the spiciest part of the show, I think, the Fireside Chat. The Fireside Chat is brought to you by BTC Pins. Check them out at btcpins.com. He's got awesome pins, fantastic themed pins for Bitcoiners. Check out my collection. Use the code PlebUnderground for 5% off. Awesome pins at btcpins.com. Welcome back, everyone. It is the Fireside Chat, and joining us, we've got fellow Bitcoiner Reardon. And man, we are going to dive into it. I'm not sure exactly when I started following you on Twitter, but I definitely pay attention to a lot of your threads, and I see a lot of the conversation going back and forth. I know that you're quote unquote signaling for LNHance, and I guess before we dive into all of the absolute shit show and the craziness that's going on between all of these proposals, the social narratives, the quote unquote attacks, and all of that, I guess, can you give a little bit of background? Because I saw that you worked for some interesting people before. I saw you worked for Kaza Soddle and BitGo. Sorry, Kaza Hoddle.
I used to work for Kaza, yeah. Like, yeah. I was actually a customer once upon a time.
Me too.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, and then I left when they turned shitcoiners. I'm getting, maybe you did something similar. But Reardon's also been. And I was like, who's this guy that used to work with Cass that followed me? I was like, this guy seems kind of smart. I'll follow him back. Yeah. And he's actually been hosting a bunch of really good technical spaces on Twitter more recently. Yeah, which I very much appreciate.
Yeah, so I've been in Bitcoin a long time. As I think a lot of people, this is true for, I've been in Bitcoin too long to be as poor as I still am. That's just kind of the way it goes. But yeah, I came to Bitcoin very naturally because I was a software engineer and anarchist before Bitcoin. So it was a natural fit and got into it early. And then when Bitcoin pumped past 5,000 for the first time, I kind of realized this is not just going away. And I have to use my skills to improve Bitcoin. And around that time, Jameson Lopp posted looking for engineers at Casa, you know, back-end engineers. Like I do that. That's what I do. And so we had a couple conversations, and I went over and joined them just before the first customer came on at Casa. So I think I got there. And speaking of code coverage in the last segment, you know, they had gotten everything working, but they had a backend that was basically untested when I got there. So I took Casa's backend and took it from untested to fully tested, basically in time for the first customers to get on and start putting money into it. It was a lot of fun. Casa was an awesome experience. Funny story. I the one time I've worked on anything really shitcoin related was that we were prototyping an Ethereum single sig wallet while I was still at Casa, which we ended up abandoning at the time. And then some years later, they did indeed add Ethereum to the Casa wallet. Yeah. So since then, I've been doing a kind of my own hardware wallet project with a couple of guys that did not go anywhere, and then joined BitGo before now going over to Swan.
I'm sorry. What was the last piece you said? Where are you now?
I'm at Swan now.
Okay.
Wait, I thought Swan's just marketing people. They have actual engineers that work for them. What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, I love that question. And it's funny because I to be factual, I actually took a brief dalliance between BitGo and Swan at this little tiny startup. I didn't apply at Swan because I wasn't positive they were kind of a serious enough engineering company. And then while I was doing this, what's that?
No, Walton said you heard it here first. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, while I was doing that, they hired some really serious engineering talent. And I took a second look and realized that behind all that marketing fluff, they already had some really great engineers, and they'd hired some additional really great engineering talent recently. And that really changed my view on Swan. So I think Swan is a company that started out marketing focused and has grown more and more engineering focused over the years. And right now I would say is really putting down some good code.
I will say this. I was actually I was pretty impressed that they purchased the Spectre desktop team, right? I think that product is amazing. I have Spectre running on my node, but I also have the Spectre do-it-yourself hardware wallet, which I know, like, I don't think there really is much going on with that thing anymore, but I think it is super cool. I personally loved the fact that it has those security cards as an extra layer of protection and the touch screen. I mean, that thing, I think that thing could have given hardware wallets a run for their money.
Yeah. Ben Kaufman, who I think was with them before. Yes. Has I think just recently joined. I'm trying to think what they're called now. They used to be called Hexa Wallet. And Ben Kaufman's joined them as like the, I don't know, like lead engineer or something like that. And he's going to be doing, I think both software and signing device consulting for them.
So we're gonna go back to let's talk about LEnhance. Now, from what I understood, CTV and LEnhance go hand in hand.
Or CTV is one part of LEnhance.
Yeah,
like LEnhance also has. Is it
Tool Us?
What is it called? CSFS. Check.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. How we sound? School Us.
yeah. So LEnhance, the thought behind combining some things was that CTV on its own is great and useful, but it's useful in a narrow area, which is on-chain UTXO sharing. It doesn't itself do much to help with Lightning itself. So by combining CTV with CSFS, checksig from Stack, you can do much more to enhance Lightning, because Lightning depends on signed updates to shared UTXOs. So checksig from Stack lets you sign your templates for check template verify and then use those in Lightning. So that's where the combination of opcodes came in. And then in a shit posting group that I'm in, I was asking for names for this combination of things, and this guy it me Brain on Twitter
of course
suggested LEnhance.
Brian came up with this.
Yeah, that guy.
That's awesome.
I'm impressed.
I'm not surprised, actually. In all fairness, I'm not really surprised, but continue. This is a great story.
Yeah, so I kind of sat on that for a little bit, and because I was working on writing the pull request for Bitcoin Core to combine these three opcodes together, I was dealing with this really long name, CTV, CSFS, IK. Like, it was terrible, right? So once I had the name, I slept on it for a day or two. Yeah. And then I was like, no, we're going with it. We're going with LEnhance. And the longer it's had that name, the more truthful I think it is. Because at first I was looking at Arc as a separate thing from Lightning. But even if you ask Barack, you know, Arc was built originally based on the want to build a better Lightning wallet. And so CTV can enable things like Arc, and those let you tie in to the Lightning network in a more user-friendly way. And then it also, LEnhance also enables Lightning Symmetry, formerly L2. It also improves the scripts for point time locked contracts that a lot of people want on Lightning. And so it really does end up being this big set of ways to better connect the Lightning network and to connect to the Lightning network better.
Okay, so let me ask you this. What shitcoining does all of this enable? Right, because let's be honest, right? Like, we always, as you know, right, being in Bitcoin, I mean, again, you write code, so you probably see a way more nuanced side of this than I do. But for me, it's like I always end up seeing all the virtues of everything, right? Hey, we're going to enable this, and this is what it does, right? These are all the great things. So what type of like ridiculous shitcoining do you think that we are going to be able to see as a result? Because for some reason, everything that comes into Bitcoin enables some type of a thing that we don't want, as well as things that we do want. So, you know, just trying to be, you know, objective.
Yeah. And to be honest, part of the reason I chose these three opcodes to actually write a pull request for, because I'd been working on Covenant stuff for about a year before hitting on this combination, And I'd propose my own thing and all this stuff. So the reason I sat on these and kind of went forward with this path is because the surface area for that kind of thing is much smaller here than with other things I've been looking at. One way to look at it is check template verify is exactly one hash mode, one way of reducing the transaction to a hash that can be verified. Mm-hmm. Whereas the any prev out proposal is what they say, just some sig hash modes, but it enables six new ways to hash the transaction when you're signing it. And so this CTV is a very restricted change and that only has one way of hashing the transaction that makes it easier to reason about what all it can do.
Mm.
So less than a lot of other things. That said, when I kind of think expansively about what can be possible with CSFS and CTV, the biggest place where I think there's a connection to shitcoining, let's say, is that with checksig from stack, you can check a signature on anything you want to put on the stack. And that could be a hash of the transaction in the case of CTV. It could be a time lock. If you want to have a variable time lock that you can sign different time locks for different purposes, you could use checksig from stack to do signed time locks. But it also means you could sign, for example, an Ethereum transaction hash and link to an Ethereum transaction with an atomic swap in that way. But you could already do that with discrete log contracts. So the place where I see it tying into shitcoining is that, and it's something that you can already do with other mechanisms. So there is a tie-in, but it's as far as I can tell, nothing more than we could already do.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it increases the surface area. So, okay, I mean, I can appreciate that. And to be fair, you're the first person that I've asked that question to, and I've spoken to at this point, I think like three or four different devs, and you're the first one that actually gave me a use case or kind of like a piece in the direction of that, because for me that's all I'm trying to figure out, right? Like because in terms of the benefits, everybody always wants to tout the benefits because that's what sales is, right? Like you always want to be able to sell the features. Nobody ever wants to tell you about why shit is broken, right? Nobody wants to air out their dirty laundry. And I think that that's kind of really important for us in Bitcoin to do.
I totally agree. I mean, I think it's frankly, in recent years, that's become an important part of my Twitter persona, let's say, is like, I'm the guy that is just honest about things. I don't sell, I have an agenda, but I don't oversell my agenda. I try to be honest about the nuances of my agenda because I think that's actually the more helpful thing in the long term, even though it may not get me as fast forward right now.
So what you're saying is basically you're Shinobi, but you can actually code.
I Shinobi and I get along well.
Okay, wait.
Okay, he's so a friend on. Of mine. That's why I'm trolling him with this. Like, I think he's quite good at reviewing code, right? There are like, but.
Yeah, he and I were shooting the shit with the other day, and he has this ability to look at things from the high level and see mm-hmm. how different pieces interact at a very high level that I'm not as good at. But then he can't get deep and get really concrete as to what's possible with the code itself. And so we actually work well together in discussing these things.
So let's just start to trigger people. Did you watch the Pedro McCormack interview with Shinobi?
I listened
or
to
did
it.
You just see or did you just see the clip
or just the that, clip that where caused, he calls everyone
that,
retarded
yeah, that, yeah and that caused Twitter to completely melt down and freak out.
the best part of the entire incident was that the clip came out and everyone started assuming what else he said for the entire interview based on the clip, but nobody actually watched it. It was so amazing.
Oh my god. And
I've
this
never
is the other
watched
thing.
An episode of that.
No, me neither. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I haven't watched a Pedro episode in several years. I totally respect Shinobi, but I can't watch Pedro. But what I can say is this, right? It was absolutely ridiculous that anybody who's actually listened to Shinobi, right? Like regularly before he did that interview, like he really did. And Gold Leader, right, fellow Bitcoiner on Twitter. He said it best, right? Like this is nothing that he hasn't said already. All of these things, like if you sit in a space with Shinobi for like an hour,
every day,
yeah,
he says it every day.
This is what he says. These are the things that he says. So, like, why are you so mad? And then on top of that, right, like the ridiculousness about. So now all of a sudden, right? So hold on, if we are anti-filter, Okay, because we're going to get into all that crap too, right? Like, why not? Everybody's exhausted with it. Let's just keep talking about it. Like, so somehow, if you don't support the people that want to filter, then you're a fucking spook and a JPEG supporter. So like, it's like, so all of a sudden we're just all polarized into these camps, right? You're either for filters or you're against filters. It's like,
filter boys.
Well, like, that's
time in my head, it's like Team America. They're like, filter boys, fuck yeah. Like, and, but yeah, they're just puppets, right?
But I'm picturing the island boys, though. I don't know. Anyway, sorry, go.
I think Portland Hoddle's work is so important because Portland Hoddle was like a lightweight hero for the filter boys for a while there because he was working on reducing the UTXO set, which is cool work he's doing, and it may go into Bitcoin Core at some point. So he was
did
like a lightweight hero.
Did you see
what
he did for Marathon?
Yeah, well, then he does what he did
for Marathon.
We're
going to get into that,
and it goes to kaboom!
You know, Pleb Underground shares a lot of the tutorials that Portland Hoddle does because they're fucking amazing. Okay, and this is to the point, right? Like, guys, you know, like this guy is not an enemy to Bitcoin. He is a code writer that is writing code, and quite possibly he may understand what he's doing a little bit better than some of us who have absolutely no knowledge in that domain, and really our opinions, right, for lack of a better term, are just fucking useless in some cases. And I think people can't accept that.
Yeah, I think what Portland did is so important because it shows the baseline facts of the matter, which is that miners will mine profitable transactions because it's in their best interests. And because that's a baseline fact, pretending that's not true isn't going to help us improve Bitcoin.
Wait, so it's not about like ethics, like there's actually incentives drive behavior? What?
So yeah, okay, hold on. I also heard this other thing about somehow miners could be incentivized to take on, okay, right, because what people are imagining is that people are going to go and use Slipstream. Okay, that's what we're talking about, guys, Slipstream, that announcement from Marathon. So that people are going to use Slipstream and essentially kind of like, you know, just pay exuberant amount of money, you know, for these transactions, crowding out, right, the cheaper transactions, which before, if I'm not mistaken, before Slipstream, we were already seeing this more expensive. Like, I know it sounds crazy, but like you guys said, like the miners, right, they're incentivized to mine the most lucrative transactions that they have. So how, I don't understand how people would think that somehow the incentive would go to start to mine cheaper transactions. Like, I don't get it. Like, and then I'm hearing this piece about possible, you know, people just miners virtue signaling, right? Like, you know, so I'll mine the cheaper transactions because I'm trying to do right by the little guy. I don't know. I don't know.
But
if
Phil, you don't get it. The miners don't run Bitcoin. The nodes run Bitcoin. And if you know, if the users you know, don't want the miners to do that, then the miners aren't going to do that. Yeah, if all of the users don't want that, maybe, but that's not how this works. This isn't a democracy.
Well, I was saying on Twitter yesterday, you know, it's the nodes run Bitcoin, not the miners, because of consensus. And so I absolutely, if the filter team or whatever you want to call them have a great consensus change that's gonna improve the lot of Bitcoin plebs everywhere and keep transaction fees down and maybe make block space more efficient or make it more expensive to do certain things that might be non-preferable on Bitcoin. Fine, let's do a consensus change because that's how we control the miners. That's how we maintain the Bitcoin network's important abilities is through consensus. So let's do it.
Yeah. It's getting crazy out there.
Oh, I wanted to say one last thing about Slipstream because the one distortion that is, I think, really important to be aware of here is that if Slipstream becomes popular and Marathon gets most of the transactions they mine, let's say from Slipstream and not from the mempool or from the distributed mempools around the world, if that happens, that's a really bad thing because now when I want to make a transaction, I don't know what fee to pay because I don't know what's out there. And so it's a really bad thing if Marathon becomes incentivized to get a lot of transactions through Slipstream. So I think it's very important that we as the Bitcoin users in the world ensure that miners get most of their transactions from the relay network so we know what fee to pay.
There's already a little bit of that, right? There's already a little bit of that, but I agree. You don't want like a fragmented fee market, essentially.
I mean, I was also just thinking this, right, as well. It would seem obvious that other mining, right, like that other essentially mining companies would start to do the same thing and leverage the same type of technology as Slipstream, right? Because it's competition. You know, like why should Marathon be the only one that gets to have these, that gets to have these types of transactions, you know, or these lucrative transactions? Other miners are obviously going to want those transactions as well. So now does that tamper with the miners' incentives?
It absolutely does. Now we have this situation of you can have kind of paid order flow. Like the bad thing that we had in TradFi,
so a second order book?
When Citadel was buying the order flow from Robinhood to front run Robinhood users, right? That's now coming to Bitcoin with Slipstream. And we don't want that, but I'm glad it's there because it makes it very clear that preserving the open relay of Bitcoin is extremely important and that trying to filter it beyond consensus is harmful to Bitcoin, actively harmful.
Can you tell that guy, Chris, like, please, like, I'm fed up of hearing about filters, like, and it's, oh, but you guys don't know that that's what's going to happen. There's just a lack of, thinking of like the second order effects from the filter boys, like it's exhausting.
Okay, let me ask
last
you...
just last question before we move on to the next section. What do you say to the people that to the Ossify gang? Yeah, are these upgrades some sort of attack on Bitcoin? Like, I mean, I personally don't think they are, but I think, you know, we got to have something to scale Bitcoin, but I don't know. There's a lot of mixed messaging on Twitter, and I think you see a lot of proponents of these scaling solutions. A lot of the proponents of scaling solutions are intelligent technical people, other intelligent people who are less technical, and then like various, you know, shitcoiners and corporate people like David Bailey.
Talk about him.
What do you have to say to the people that say, oh, David Bailey likes this thing, so therefore we shouldn't have it?
Don't trust Verify. Do your own research. Like the classic Bitcoin sayings apply.
Are we past that point though? Like, not everyone can read the code, right? Like, not everyone can think about the effects. Like,
well, apparently nobody can read either. So it's like,
yeah, I think you're right that they can't think about it themselves necessarily. But if you let something be poisoned by a certain personality that likes it, I think that's a very toxic trait in anything, frankly. That's not how ideas work. So that's why I broke kind of my privacy cover this year or last year to start talking about this stuff, is because I saw people not feeling enabled to think about things and kind of having to trust a wizard on one side or a suit on the other side. And one of the skills I've developed over my years in the field is being able to at least somewhat communicate about highly technical things in a way that people can understand. So I took that skill on the road, and here I am on your podcast and elsewhere. So yes. People can verify. I think more people than realize actually can think these things through and reason about what should be done on Bitcoin. So to the Ossify crew, I would say, think about it yourself. Is it okay, Bitcoin right now, where the absolute maximum, if we perfectly optimize Lightning and every person only needs two transactions a year, we get 100 million people on Bitcoin. Is that enough people on Bitcoin? Is that all the people? When you say not your keys, not your coins, are you only talking to 100 million people, or are you talking to everyone? And if you're talking to everyone, we need to keep changing Bitcoin in some way to let more people hold their keys than 100 million. That's the absolute maximum.
I think that's a very good point. And we are actually going to get into some of the Ossify stuff, because I've got a tweet from David Bailey that's kind of contentious. It's kind of contentious. Anyways, guys, let us know what you think. Hopefully we didn't trigger all of you too much. Let us know what you think. Put it in the comments. That wraps up the Fireside Chat with Reardon, and we are going to move it on over to Wrecked.
Up next, we have Wrecked, newly sponsored by BTC Prague. BTC Prague is the largest technical conference in Europe, and I think one of the biggest conferences in the world. And they don't allow shit coiners, right? Like, this is kind of they're kind of based. They got a bunch of speakers. It's gonna be really good this year. They keep growing each year, and now, thanks to our little collaboration, we can help you get a discount on your tickets to BTC Prague. If you go to btcprague.com, you can get 10% off if you use the code PLEB. Once again, that's 10% off if you use the code PLEB over at btcprague.com. Check yourself before you wrecked yourself. Thank you.
Welcome back to Wrecked. Guys, this week was no shortage of train wrecks on Twitter and in mainstream media. Let's dive into it. This is a tweet from Magoo, a video of Joe Kernan talking with Andrew Ross Sorkin. We are watching Andrew Ross Sorkin cope in real time. Let's watch this video. It's only 9 seconds long, but it's got so
Phil,
much.
Phil, I need to hype this up more. Like, this was like, fantastic. Like what do you want to say? I don't know. This was amazing. Like, I love this. This was like the most retarded thing on Bitcoin this week. Like, more retarded than anything that Shinobi called out. Like, this is the most retarded thing about Bitcoin this week. Yeah.
You're Let's overselling go, it, Phil. Man. You're overselling it, man. People are gonna get pissed, but here we go.
Did it because it's a store value.
I don't appreciate it.
Store value or say store value, not speculative. That goes up. No. Store value would stay one price.
No.
Like, no, you appreciate store value.
Those eyes, guys. Oh my God. Talk about the cope. Okay. So here, before we move to the next ridiculous story, let's do some comments on this. So, store of value. I did not understand what his point was. Like, does he not know that the government prints money? Like, I don't get that. Anyways.
Well, it's a weird thing to say that it should stay one price. It should stay one value, but value and price are totally different things right now, at least.
That's exactly the point. It's so funny, that cell phone. Walton, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm just gonna, yeah, so TC got a screenshot of this, and I think it encapsulates it perfectly. Look at the eyes, guys. Look at the eyes. The eyes never lie.
Is he a lizard person? Like, I mean,
maybe all you need is the tongue slip out, maybe. I don't know. Like, this, yeah.
That's a face of a man who is coping very hard, trying to understand, and he is doing... So, look, some people said, like, look, he most likely knows... And he just can't say it. I saw some comment that said that he's just doing what he's paid for, no matter how stupid he looks. I'd like to believe that he knows that Joe Kernan makes sense and is actually right and kind of understands Bitcoin. But Andrew Ross Sorkin has had so many self-owns that I'm not sure.
Yeah, people say you shouldn't blame on malice what you can blame on incompetence, and I'm pretty sure this is just pure incompetence. At the same price.
So, brainwashing is a powerful thing.
Exactly. But speaking about incompetence, malice, let's take a look at the next story here. I don't know if anybody else saw this ridiculous tweet, okay? But I thought that this was a pretty insane self-owned. So here we go. This is from Vitalik. And honestly, I'm about 3x less confident in the simplify L1, even at the expense of more complicated L2s concept, than I was 5 years ago. The challenge is that when you can trade off between L1 bug risk and L2 bug risk, it's not actually clear that the latter is better. And this is to me where the self-owned takes place. If you have an L1 consensus failure, stuff breaks, core devs scramble for a day, but eventually things are all right again. With an L2 bug, people could permanently lose lots of money. Now, I I may not understand this, okay? And I have no problem, you know, admitting that I'm a retard in many instances. But if an L2 is built on top of an L1 and the L2 fails, shouldn't L1 be the secure layer that holds that, so that even if the losses occur on L2, everything still exists in its most raw form on L1? Am I missing something? Like, does this just, I don't even know what the hell he's trying to say. Like, is he just saying that, like, somehow it's not as important? Like, the base layer is not as important?
I took what he was saying to be more along, like, a control thing. He's kind of saying, I can control what happens on L1 on Ethereum, and that control lets me protect people from getting wrecked. So I think that's where his brain was at. He's like, we can fix it if it's on L1. And he's thinking back probably to the DAO hack, where because the DAO was anchored to L1, they could roll it back and fix it. So there's truth in that regard, because with an L2, even if an L2 is theoretically anchored to the L1, Shinobi was talking about this the other day. If there's data loss in the off-chain data, let's say it's a ZK rollup and someone loses part of the ZK proof, that's now a permanent loss of funds in the L2. You can never recover the state of the L2 because the ZK proof data is gone. And so I think that's what Vitalik is thinking about here. But yeah, it's a very strange statement to make.
Was it a real L2 though? I mean, that's kind of a philosophical question, right? Because the way I see L2s, because of the way that Lightning is built, and I understand that there would be off-chain and, you know, and stuff like that, but in terms of Lightning, right, it's like that transaction still has to be, that channel has to be opened on the base layer, and it still has to be closed on the base layer. So technically the base layer has knowledge of at least the opening of that transaction. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think it is a huge cell phone, because the premise that the core devs can basically roll back the chain is just this huge cell phone.
Right? It's like, hey, we're centralized and it's all about me. Sorry, Walton, go ahead.
The way I'm gonna try and use an analogy here, and I think this works. Like if you imagine that these layers in the shitcoin world are essentially like condoms, right? And Vitalik's like, he's like, okay, so we've got one layer, but they've got as everyone knows, Ethereum's got a bunch of holes in it, right? And so like, they can still like really fuck you even with one layer, but if other people put other layers on top, they can't fuck you as much. And I think that's what he's saying. They just want to fuck you. They just want to. It's that simple.
Yeah, I think so. All right, we're going to move on to our last story for Wrecked. Here we go. Yeah, this is where, again, we're bringing in some spice. We're bringing some spice to Wrecked. So this is a tweet from, well, it's actually a retweet from HODL Alabama Ghost. And here we go. I don't care if CTV is actually needed. I'll fight to the death against Changed Forever because of tweets like this, right? And we were talking about Ossify before, and that's what he says. Now, again, that's not actually the Wrecked part, believe it or not. And again, people can, that could be a matter of opinion. For me, it's more about this tweet that David Bailey put out, and let me just read the whole thing. The current culture war isn't about ordinals or spam or shitcoins. It's about distilling and harmonizing a shared vision for Bitcoin. Where are we now and where do we want to go? Are we digital gold coexisting with fiat, or are we permissionless value obsoleting fiat? If latter, change will be necessary. I'm okay with that. I get that. The next BIP, then this is where it gets ugly for me. The next BIP that achieves consensus realigns our direction, whichever faction led its activation effort will have the credibility to suggest what's next and to set the tempo. Unique moment with significant implications, in my opinion. And this is where it gets muddy. Now, I'm not saying what David Bailey said. Like, I'm not saying what he said is somehow wrong, but I'm saying what he said implies something very dangerous, right? And that is, and this kind of reminds me when we had Jimmy Song on here and he was talking about Picasso and how Picasso's art sold. Picasso, he was a brand. He created a brand out of himself. And this that tweet kind of signifies the same thing, right? That if the person who pushes the effort that gets rolled in, all of a sudden, they become the brand of who to trust for Bitcoin. And I think that's where it gets really muddy and dangerous. Guys.
Phil, you mean like how some people like wear like a cowboy hat to create a brand, sell books? Like, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Good example though, right? I mean, it's not, but the point is he gave the valid example about Picasso, right?
So I mean, I kind of like Picasso, but I was, each to their own.
Yeah, no, of course. But I think that goes in line, right? His story like kind of goes in line with that. Yeah. What are your thoughts, Riordan?
It sounds like David Bailey is thinking that we need like a roadmap or something. And that sounds awfully a lot like Ethereum to me. So I'm a pretty hard disagree with what he said here.
Wasn't Vitalik like was he the co-founder of Bitcoin Magazine or something like that? Maybe they're kind of buddies. Oh, wait a second. Didn't they all invest in Taproot Wizards? Oh, interesting.
Don't talk to me about Ordinal's wallet. Sorry. Go on.
So yeah, I think we need to really be honest with ourselves, and Bitcoin will never have a roadmap. And fortunately, the kind of few people who could have potentially set a roadmap for Bitcoin, kind of the Peter Wolle, Greg Maxwells, have stepped away. And that's such a good thing. You know, even if let's say that my efforts to get LEnhance activated work, the great thing about that is that that's a personal pet project of mine that I care about getting more plebs their own keys, and I'm not going to keep pushing for the next change. So if I get the next change, and that's certainly not going to be a roadmap based on what I think. Thank goodness. So I don't think that's going to happen. And I think that's true of the other people that have changes they want to make too. Everyone has, and that's the way Bitcoin should be, right? Everyone has their own thing they're working on. They push their own thing for their own reasons, and the rest of the community decides whether that thing is something they want to bring in or not. There's no group setting a direction. That's just not the way this works, thankfully.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, let us know what you think. Put it in the comments. That wraps up Wrecked, and we are going to move it on over to the Hopium.
The Hopium.
The Hopium is brought to you by CipherSafe. Check them out at ciphersafe.io. Guys, at this point, you need a seed plate, okay? I'm not even going to sit there and tell you that you don't. You do need a seed plate, and you need one that is virtually indestructible. And why not have it made by actual Bitcoiners? Check out the Cypher Grid from CipherSafe. Comes with this awesome little punch tool. Check it out at ciphersafe.io. Also from CipherSafe, check out the Bitcoin Rollo Triangle. That's right, 16 ounces of solid titanium, beautiful Bitcoin branding. Check it out at ciphersafe.io. That is the Bitcoin Rollo Triangle.
Welcome back to Hopium. I have a few stories for you this week. The first story is there are now other companies buying Bitcoin to have as part of their cash reserve. It's another software company. It's Reddit. But they're also buying some shit coins. They're buying Ether, and then apparently Ether and Matic. Sounds like they know what they're doing. Not. But it does say, wait, somewhere there that they have a... The Ether and Matic received from sales of virtual goods was not material for the years ending 2022 and 2023. Interesting. Gents, your thoughts?
Reddit's gotten to be such a kind of shit company over the years. It's weird that they're the next one to put Bitcoin on the balance sheet because I don't think it's that weird.
I can make the connection for you. Like, so basically, the founder of Reddit, who I think is still a major shareholder, Alexis Ohanian or something like that. He married like the most successful female tennis player ever, Serena Williams, who is a big Bitcoiner and shitcoiner. I think she promoted some shitcoiner at a previous conference, maybe even. But anyway, please, your thoughts.
But yeah, it is cool to see, though. I mean, I think every company is going to do this at some point. It's the obvious way to hedge. Companies are already very comfortable with foreign currency hedges. And the as the accounting rules get easier on Bitcoin, it's an obvious move for a lot of companies.
I gotta say, didn't Reddit have their own shitcoin at some point, right? Didn't, was it not them? Or I'm confusing them with Steam, I think. No, wasn't it Red? Like, wasn't that the ticker? Like, R-E-D-D? Anyways, I don't know. I got to go back and take a look. I feel like they had their own shit coin. Okay, so look, I'd say this. I'd say that they know that. So interestingly enough, right, you'll have, I think you'll have some companies which are already successful and just kind of want to back that up and put Bitcoin on the balance sheet. And then you have other companies that know that they're a sinking ship and they're about to go down, and they need to make sure that they don't go down, and Bitcoin becomes their lifeboat as well. And I know people are going to hate me for saying this. I don't really care, but I don't know anybody that uses, I've never even, and I worked in a corporate environment with corporate applications, mission critical stuff. I never heard of MicroStrategy before,
I was about to say,
before Michael Saylor came to Bitcoin. So like, yeah, I think it's like, look, this can save our company. Anyways, I know everybody hates.
I was wondering which bucket you were putting MicroStrategy in. I was like, they're definitely,
you know where
in
I'm
this,
going,
this, sec- this second one. I was just double checking here, because I think Reddit, both companies are in that thing, right? They're like, how do we stop the melting ice cube that is our company? Yeah, I think there's a bunch of people that like have used MicroStrategy products and then just completely forget about them, like just completely unmemorable. They do business intelligence, right? Spooky stuff. Anyway, that's enough about bullshit fiat companies. I have some real hopium that something that I think is quite exciting. So Brains, one of the smaller mining pools, but a mining pool nonetheless, are introducing Lightning payouts. I think this is very exciting for two reasons. One, it's better for privacy than miners receiving UTXOs. And two, I think it's also better for solo miners, people that have small amounts of hash rate. They're not going to have a bunch of small UTXOs or have to leave it with the pool and do a withdrawal later. And so there's more self-custody of mining rewards without small UTXOs. Yeah, I've not read into it, but it sounds to me very, very exciting. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
Does Brains offer solo mining? I'm curious.
Oh, sorry, when I say solo mining, I'm misusing the term. Sorry, I mean, as in it's not. I mean home mining. Sorry, not solo mining. Okay. I mean home mining. I mean, you know, not big corporate payouts. Entities with thousands and thousands of miners. I mean, you know, there's like one guy with an S19 or whatever it is, right? Gotcha. People that would have to, I don't know, have like a few thousand sats a day, maybe is what they're earning, or a bit more, that would otherwise have to leave it with the pool or have small UTXOs.
Yeah, I think this is great. And, you know, it's funny. I've had a lot of conflict with the Ocean Mining team recently. I'm going to say their name because a lot of what they set out to do is so important. And I want desperately for Ocean to succeed in getting Stratum V2 out there and getting immediate miner payouts out there and getting Lightning payouts out there. These are all things they said they were going to do up front. And then a bunch of the people that work there have gone down this very strange path of focusing on something else other than all the important stuff they're doing. So I'm glad Brains is doing this. I hope it pushes Ocean and others to do it as well. It's an important part of Bitcoin's mining decentralization.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I can just not necessarily add to it, but adjacently, right, I've heard some pleb miners essentially explain that, like, they're not, for whatever reason, they're not interested in Lightning payouts. Which I don't understand. Like, why would you, like, who cares, right? Like, somebody just offered you a new way to get paid and it's going to cost less. Like that's not something to be against. I feel like, I don't know, for me, that's like one of those things. Like, I learned this a while ago. Like, when you have some type of a discussion or an issue or something, is this the hill you want to die on? And if the answer is no, then that's it to me. Like, that's the end of the story. Like, this is not a hill I'm willing to die on. And I just don't
get it. And you hate Lightning, Phil. And you hate Lightning. Like,
do I?
The,
do
no, I hate Lightning? Not really. But it's like, I don't know. I think there's a lot of people that it's weird. I find that there's a bunch of people that are clearly somewhat technical because they're able to mine, but they haven't worked out the technicalities of Lightning. And I find that bizarre to me. Yeah.
It's like, why even pick that as a point of contention, right? Like, I don't want Lightning payouts. That's terrible. Not a point of contention. Anyways,
I don't think you have to. It's not like they're making you only do Lightning Pay. Like, they're just giving it as an option. That's the strange one.
That I think would be really interesting with this Lightning payouts becoming more common is the mining pools are going to have channels open to facilitate this because they mostly pay out, right? They mine and then they pay out. So they're going to be burning down their outbound liquidity when they do this. And so I'd be very interested to see if they're going to find Lightning channel partners that will let them open a channel with them from the Coinbase, a channel that's not valid immediately, that becomes valid 100 blocks later from the Coinbase. And that'd be a very cool thing to see. Like, that'd be real innovation in Bitcoin.
Sorry, you got the light bulb going on, and then all of a sudden it became the Homer meme with the monkey just hitting the symbols together.
I mean, the point is,
that's a really good
interesting
point.
And then boom, I was like, gone.
You know, apparently, like if they activated CTV, they might be able to do like channel factories from that, right? They could open all these channels in one go. But just a quick query on this. My understanding is there's a bunch of mining pools that actually just kind of pay out essentially from their reserves, and then they top up at various points. I don't know which if Brains is in that category. Whereas, like, I think some pools only pay out like when they actually hit blocks. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, most pools pay out from a reserve.
That's right.
And actually, in a previous life, I've helped facilitate that, where they hold coins that have been mined in an account that is kind of separate, and they can in some cases borrow against those coins they have already mined but are not mature yet. So there's all these things they do to kind of smooth out the payouts, and then also to protect themselves on the backside of that with loans and stuff.
So I'm thinking with that comment you made about the outbound liquidity, right? Since it's constantly draining, what it kind of got me thinking of is maybe that kind of, because they enable these types of payments and because the frequency at which those outbound liquidity drains, maybe it prompts innovation in that part of the user, like in that part of the UX, right? Like I do find that part of Lightning is a bit clunky, right? Because how do you replenish your Lightning channel? If I'm not mistaken, the only way right now is looping in, if I'm not mistaken. So, and that's not really obvious to, again, to the average person. So I think that this might be kind of one of those
submarine swaps.
Sorry, submarine swaps as well?
You can do submarine swaps, which is like doing a private like loop in, if you will, right? Like it's, you can send your buddy some funds on chain, and then also send him a Lightning invoice. It's not a trustless way of doing it, but it is another way that you can do it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then there's a peer swap where you can do that, but with just your immediate peer, so you don't push liquidity around the whole network. You only push it between you and your immediate peer.
That's kind of what I mean. Yeah, really.
Yeah, so I think maybe that kind of helps push it. Sorry, go ahead, Walton.
Oh, that's it. I have one final story. It's hopium because it's the mainstream media asking very important people about Bitcoin. And of course, Bitcoin can't be trumped, so... So what am I showing you? I'm showing you a Fox reporter asking the real Donald Trump about Bitcoin.
China obviously has its own push in the Chinese digital currency. But isn't the next logical step for you to embrace Bitcoin? Because Bitcoin obviously is decentralized. The government can't get its hands on it. What about Bitcoin with all the young people, including African Americans, who are very interested in it?
Well, a lot of people are doing it. I always liked one currency. I call it a currency. I like the dollar. But a lot of people are doing it. And frankly, it's taken a life of its own. You probably have to do some regulation, as you know. But many people are embracing it. And more I'm seeing people wanting to pay Bitcoin. And you're seeing something that's interesting. So I can live with it one way or the other. I've always liked one really powerful thing, and that's called the dollar.
Yeah.
So, unsurprisingly, a U.S. Politician saying they like the dollar because that's just being patriotic, right? And repping your currency. But I don't know. I kind of liked it. Again, Trump, of course, doesn't really answer the question, right? As politicians are good at doing. But he didn't. He, you know, I don't know. He was more positive on it than I think even RFK, who'll be speaking at ETH Denver soon. So yeah. You know, yeah.
Him and Caitlin Long down bad.
Yep.
Just to say, the angry Chihuahua. He did call it. He called it several years ago. Lots of people shat on him. Okay. Lots of people, as they usually do, they get upset at Aoi. Okay. But truth is, he was right. So just saying that. But look, going back to your the piece about Trump, that is, I think, the closest form to an endorsement you can get from him. He's not going to lie. He is a dollar maxi. Right, like that. That's like to him, like that. That's not going to change.
He's a real estate maxi. Like, and actually, for him not to say, "Oh, well, you know, it's not bricks and mortar," or something, like, he didn't even talk about real estate.
That's a good point. What are your thoughts? Really?
I just like the word Bitcoin on an interview, you know, with the regular media. People have avoided saying it a lot of the time, and now they can't really avoid it anymore. And that's, I think, the hopium right there.
I totally
agree. Very well said.
Yeah.
And that wraps up Hopium for this week. Phil?
Guys, that wraps up the show. I always prompt you for your comments because I want to know whether you love or hate us. So let us know. Put it in the comment. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Help us grow the channel. And don't forget to check us out on our audio-only platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor. Before we go, Reardon, if people want to find you, how can they get in touch with you?
I'm Reardon Code, R-E-A-R-D-E-N Code on most platforms, GitHub, Twitter, etc.
Awesome. We are going to put that in the show notes. And guys, if you want to stream us sats, you can always stream us sats through Breeze. Anyways, Walton, how do we end this one?
Fuckshitcoins.com. Please like and subscribe. We will see you next week.
More toxic than the most toxic Bitcoin maxi ever.